Time for It Says in the Papers from Fiona Kelly.
The headlines in the Irish Times and Irish Independent this morning both highlight the last-minute reprieve given to first-time buyers yesterday in the revised mortgage plan announced by the central bank, which will allow banks to lend 90% of a €220,000 loan, with 80% of the balance of the cost of a house to first-time buyers. The Independent suggests that the new system will discriminate against those living in cities and large towns where house prices are higher. The Irish Daily Mail also leads with the story today, taking the line that the new rules have slammed the door on those who want to trade up. An attack on families is the headline there. Elsewhere this morning, Anti-Austerity Alliance Deputy Paul Murphy has defended the right of water protesters to target the President because he signed the Water Charges Bill into law. This is following the release of a video on YouTube which shows protesters in Finglas running after Michael D. Higgins' car and shouting verbal abuse at him following his visit to a school last Friday. That's the lead story in today's Irish Examiner. The Times and Independent, meanwhile, report today on the President's address to the Council of Europe yesterday, in which he said that Ireland should not be used as some kind of exemplar. The Irish economy is not a driverless car, he said. It is citizens aboard who paid a very high price. President Higgins makes a timely call is a headline over the lead editorial in today's Independent. The Irish Daily Star and Irish Sun lead today with the Elaine O'Hara murder trial. The Irish Daily Mirror leads with the petrol bomb attack last night on the office of Fine Gael TD Michelle Mulhern in Ballina. The Independent and Examiner also run with this story in their front pages today. The Independent reports that the attack came just hours after the Mayo politician repaid almost €2,000 for phone calls she made to Kenya from Leinster House. Ms. Mulhern has denied that the calls were of a personal nature. Irish Star quizzed over assault. That's the lead headline on the front of the Herald. Over a report on the questioning of Irish international and Derby County soccer player Jeff Hendrick over an assault outside a nightclub. The 22-year-old was one of four men arrested in relation to the case, who was questioned and later released without charge from Pier Street Garda Station last Thursday. Back in the front of the Examiner, there's a story there about how the parents of a four-year-old cancer patient in the Midlands who was turned down for a medical card are being pursued by a hospital debt collector for almost €1,000 in care-related bills. The Times, meanwhile, runs with the front page story about the IMF's warning yesterday that there is limited room in the budget for a hike in public sector wages. The picture on the front of today's Times, meanwhile, is of an Auschwitz survivor walking through the gates of the concentration camp after yesterday's ceremony to mark the 70-year anniversary of the liberation of the Nazi camp. Taoiseach the Joan Burton is facing a Labour Party backbench revolt unless she blocks the sale of Aer Lingus to IAG. That's on the front of the Independent. While inside today's paper, David McWilliams' line is that Aer Lingus needs to think about global trends, not local concerns. But finally, Katie Taylor is in a number of papers this morning talking about how she hopes to feature in an RTÉ documentary about the road to Rio in 2016. She also talks about mixed martial arts fighter Conor McGregor, who is himself featuring in a new television series. Although she admits that she hasn't seen the new programme, Taylor says that she admires McGregor, but when asked by The Sun if she'd ever consider getting into the ring for a sparring session with him, she says that she wouldn't because she doesn't know much about his sport.
Fiona, thank you. 11 minutes past 7. Brian Finn is here with the business news. Apple were unhappy with the amount of iPads they sold last year, so what are their profits like for the year overall now?
They weren't happy with iPad sales, Gavin, but pretty happy with iPhone sales. And profit, as you heard in the headlines, came in at $18 billion in the three-month period just gone out. It's the highest ever profit recorded by a publicly listed company in a three-month period, and this is according to listings that are kept by the ratings agency Standard & Poor's. The last highest, or it supplants the $16 billion that was made by ExxonMobil in the second quarter of 2012. Revenue for Apple in that period was $74.6 billion. That was up 30%, and as we said, that's all down to iPhone sales. Record numbers in the three-month period, 74.5 million, well ahead of expectations. Not doing so well on phone sales is Sony. The Japanese tech giant is to cut another 1,000 jobs at its smartphone division in the next fiscal year, mainly in Europe and China. That's on top of the 1,000 jobs it's already been cutting this year. Sony shipped nearly 20% fewer phones than projected last year, losing the company an estimated $1.7 billion. Also reporting last night was internet search company Yahoo, which has announced plans to spin off its 15% shareholding in Chinese e-commerce giant Alibaba, thus avoiding a large tax bill. The $40 billion stake will be separated into an independent registered investment company called SpinCo. Yahoo reported fourth quarter earnings of $166 million, down over 50% from a year earlier. Shares were up more than 6% in after-hours trading, however, as investors gave their thumbs up to the spin-off plans. Now, there are expectations that the chief executive of International Airlines Group, Willie Walsh, will meet government representatives possibly as soon as today to discuss issues around its proposed takeover of Aer Lingus. The sale of the government's 25% shareholding in the airline is far from certain, with a number of Labour TDs speaking publicly against the plans, and a number of Fine Gael TDs are said to have difficulties with the proposals too. Any sale of the government stake has to be approved by the Dáil. Currencies finally, the euro is trading at $1.13.6 and just below 75 pence sterling, Rachel.
Thank you very much, Brian. And there's been a mixed reaction to the central bank's new rules for mortgage lending, with some arguing that first-time buyers have been given a reprieve and others insisting that young families trying to move up will see their plans scuppered. Under the new rules, first-time buyers will be able to borrow up to €220,000 once they have a 10% deposit. Any amount over €220,000 will require a 20% deposit for that part of the mortgage. All other buyers will have to come up with a 20% deposit no matter what they're seeking to borrow. In addition, prospective buyers will only be able to borrow 3.5 times their earnings. The rules came up for discussion in the Dáil last night. For the government, the Minister of State, Dara Murphy, argued that the regulations would strengthen the banking sector, while Michael McGrath of Fianna Fáil had mixed feelings.
The key objectives of these regulations is to increase the resilience of the banking sector and to reduce the risk of bank credit and house price spirals from developing in the future. And I think we all welcome this ambition. In developing the new rules, it was important to strike the right balance between achieving this objective and the ability of first-time buyers to save a deposit to purchase their first home.
In the past, the policy of the state was actively directed towards assisting people with first-time buyer grants, mortgage interest relief, relief from capital gains tax and various other subsidies. Now that policy seems to have gone to the other extreme, with a raft of planning-related levies and restrictions and the abolition of state supports for home ownership, putting the aspiration beyond the reach of many. The prospect of new strict rules, which have been clarified tonight, could be the last straw for many prospective purchasers, particularly now people who want to buy a second home, a more suitable home.
Michael McGrath there, before him Dara Murphy. Elsewhere, the Real Estate Alliance, which represents chartered surveyors and some auctioneers and estate agents, has welcomed the plans. But Pat Davitt, who's the chief executive of the Institute of Professional Auctioneers and Valuers, described the new rules as devastating.
We're coming out of a recession at the moment. The property market is barely travelling along at all, basically. The prices in Dublin are high enough, and some of the prices in the country, in different areas in the country, are high enough. But to put a full 20% of an LTV on the market at the moment, we feel is going too far. It's too much, we feel. Now, while we are happy that the decision is made, and we're happy that for first-time buyers that it's not as difficult as their 10% up to 220,000, which is a help. Certainly in the country it's a big help, and we are happy with that and we welcome it. In the city it's still going to make it very difficult for first-time buyers to buy a property. But at the same time, like, the 20% overall for people, second-time buyers of property, is very, very large amount of money to come up with.
And that was Pat Davitt of the Institute of Professional Auctioneers and Valuers. Ross Maguire of New Beginning, which helps those with mortgage debt, is here. Good morning.
Morning, Richard.
How will these rules differ from what's in place at the moment?
Well, I think the rules really are in place now for the purpose of looking forward as opposed to what's happening now. We still have a dysfunctional market, but the governor and the regulator generally has to look to what might happen if there aren't proper rules in place. I mean, we do blame the crash that we've experienced to some extent on a lack of regulation. So regulation is important. We need to close the door before the horse bolts. So it's really what's going to happen. And what the governor's talking about is this danger of what he describes as a psychological loop. So that's credit creating price increases, which creates further credit. And the idea here is to put in place reasonable rules which simply prevent that in the future. So really we're trying to prevent a future credit-fueled bubble.
How does what's being proposed now, and it seems that this will become law within the next few days, how does this differ from what was originally being proposed by Patrick Honohan a couple of months back?
Well, he was talking about a straightforward 20% deposit for everybody. There was an argument being made that first-time buyers will be particularly disadvantaged because they don't have maybe equity in a previous house and they have to come up with this cash. So he's changed that, and there's a 10% deposit for the lower-priced house. It's hard to think that a quarter of a million is considered a lower-priced house, but €220,000, you require a 10% deposit and then 20% above that. So it's a little bit of help for first-time buyers. But the important thing here, Rachel, is to note that the governor is required to take this longer term, bigger view. And while it might affect somebody who wants to buy today or first time buyer, whatever, that's all very fine. But it's important that we don't repeat the mistakes of the past. And that's what they're at here.
I'll come back to that question in just a moment. But first of all, this is something that's pointed out by a lot of the newspapers this morning, and it is worth raising. The question is that the 220,000 and 10% limit may be fine for most first-time buyers in most parts of the country, but perhaps not for those in Dublin and also in parts of Cork and Galway. There's a real split, a real divide out there at the moment.
Absolutely. I mean, but at the same time, in Dublin, wages are higher and there's more employment, so you've got to take that into account. But the governor was asked on RTE yesterday evening as to why he picked the figure of 220,000, and he said that even in Dublin, he reckoned that half the prices for first-time buyers were around the €220,000 mark. So they've picked that as kind of an average first-time buyer type price. And that's the reason for that. But it is true to say that in Dublin, prices are higher, but at the same time, there's more employment and there's more demand for housing in Dublin. But also it's important to note that this is not a panacea here. This is just a single part of a jigsaw. And the property market remains dysfunctional, as was mentioned by other commentators. Supply is very important, and planning issues are important, and regulation and taxes and all sorts of things that affect supply, and they need to be addressed.
Can we talk about that issue, about supply? Because, as you say, that issue remains. Are there sufficient homes out there at the moment, not just to buy, but also to rent? Because you can talk to many people who say, listen, I would be happy to rent if I could find a quality, affordable home. At the moment, I can't do that.
Absolutely. There is a very stark lack of supply in areas where there is a demand, and that is a real problem. And what's happened is that up to 2007 we built at an extraordinary rate, and then we simply stopped building. But as people like Ronan Lyons have pointed out, even during the boom there was a lack of supply within, say, for example, the M50 region. So there's, you know, we've got to somehow overcome that, and that unfortunately is not so simple, because there's issues such as planning, there's issues, for example, in relation to density and so forth. In big cities you can't expect to have, you know, everybody living in semi-D houses with gardens and so forth, so you're looking at more high density types of arrangements. All of that is part of the overall process of fixing our housing issue, and that will take time. But the central bank is taking its part as the prudential regulator here, and so it's not going to fix everything, but at least it's going to prevent the mistakes of the past, and that's the idea.
Will the banks be able to find a way around this? Will they be able to break the rules if they want to?
Well, the rules allow them a certain amount of leeway. So, for example, they can break the rules up to 15% of their entire book. So there is a certain amount of that. Also, it applies to where people are in negative equity. The rules simply don't apply to them. So if I'm in negative equity now and I want to trade up, the rules simply don't apply to me. So there is a certain amount of leeway. And of course, the governor makes the point that this is not, this doesn't take away from the bank's own responsibility to lend in a non-reckless manner. But experience has shown that the banks can't be trusted themselves. They need this oversight.
What impact do you think all of this will have on house prices? Because we saw quite a spurt in many parts of the country last year, certainly for the first 9 months, and then things seemed to slow down somewhat in the final quarter.
Yes, there was the governor again last night was saying there was a 40% bounce back or increase in prices in Dublin over an 18-month period. So there has been that bounce back. I think we're looking at a period of stable house prices. I mean, credit still is not available in the market. So this is a this idea that we're going to stop credit is not really there at the moment. It's a question of what might happen in the future. So I think we're looking at a stable house price situation in the future, which is a good thing. I mean, the idea of getting rich because of house prices is not good for the economy in general.
Ross Maguire of New Beginning, thank you for joining us. 24 minutes.
The Health Minister, Leo Varadkar, will be here later. We'll be talking to him about medical cards, amongst other things. The government stopped reviewing and returned discretionary medical cards after the local government elections last year. In November, the minister promised to change the scheme to make it more sensitive to people's needs. And today, he's appointing a clinical advisory group to help to do that. Let's talk now to Jonathan Irwin. He's CEO of the Jack and Jill Foundation. They help very young children with brain damage or life-limiting illnesses and their families. Jonathan, good morning to you.
Good morning to you as well.
Before we talk about the clinical advisory group, can I ask you about what the experience of the people who you help with medical cards has been since the local elections last year and indeed November? Because at the time, Leo Varadkar and Kathleen Lynch said that people with a serious illness who hold a discretionary card can be reassured that they will retain their card pending implementation of new actions. The default position for medical cards given to people with terminal illnesses is that they will no longer be reviewed. What's been your experience?
Well, I have to say, my nurses and therefore my families are saying that things are not quite as frightening as they were, and there is more sensitivity in that area, which is, you know, excellent for my parents.
So for those who are unfortunate enough to have been diagnosed with a life-limiting illness since all this happened, has getting a discretionary medical card been any easier?
It has been. There's one or two people within the administration who do understand and have gone out of their way to, as human beings really, to be more kindly to my parents. There's still one major hurdle that we have to overcome, which we've always maintained and which the United Nations reports on childcare in Ireland constantly refer to, and that is that the child, himself or herself, should be assessed as an individual in their own right. This system, which they have not got rid of and must get rid of means testing the parents, is so cruel, because it's not difficult to fail a means test, and once again these parents who are in a wretched state feel they have let their child down again. There is no need for this. I mean, children, they might only be 3 months old or 18 months old, but they are people, and it is they that are being assessed. It's their health. And this system of going via the parents is like the poorhouse. And I don't understand in Ireland why children are non-people until they are 16.
So what has changed, Jonathan?
There's just more sensitivity in the marketplace. It's not a sort of computer, centralized computer, spitting out random numbers and random decisions. It has become back to where it nearly was when it was more localized, that they are being listened to now, and children are being asked whether their Down syndrome is getting better or worse, you know. So it is better, and my nurses are certainly watchful, but it is better.
And this clinical advisory group, what do you make of that?
I think it's ridiculous. I mean,
why?
I tell you what, we've just had an expert committee that's meant to have sorted the whole problem out. Now we have a committee to discuss the decisions of a previous committee. I got an email this week telling us that this was being set up, and it was full of clinicians and administrators, but they were keeping two spaces for what they described as lay people, which is certainly not enough. I mean, if one of my nurses is chosen, how can she advise about what the elderly need or, you know, other factors? It's about people. It's not about more administrators, more clinicians, more this. I mean, our situation is very simple. What I find chilling is that they say that if one of our nurses is selected, I must understand that she will be revolved in 2 years' time. What on earth is this thing going to sit for? 2 years, 4 years, 10 years? And my children's problem about being recognized in their own right could be done and dusted at one meeting, and that's the end as far as Jack and Jill. Other people might need a few more meetings, but to already be plotting for an old age pension for this particular clinical, whatever it is just ludicrous.
We'll talk to Leo Varadkar about it later. Jonathan Irwin, CEO of the Jack and Jill Foundation, thank you very much for speaking to us. 29 minutes past seven.
Could be brewing on the government backbenches over the offer from the international airlines group IAG to buy Aer Lingus. A number of government TDs have said they want cast iron guarantees on employment and on the Heathrow landing slots before they support any sell-off. Our reporter Justin McCarthy spoke to government TDs at Leinster House last night to get their views.
The announcement by the Transport Minister Pascal Donoghue that an interdepartmental group is to make contact with IAG about its offer for Aer Lingus indicates that at the very least the government is considering selling its shares in the airline, and that alone has made some backbenchers jittery. Labour's Brendan Ryan is a North Dublin TD who wants the government to reject the offer for its shares in Aer Lingus.
My concerns are around the strategic interests, and obviously would be kind of connectivity, the Heathrow slots, tourism, business interests, the fact that we're an island nation, but not least the potential for job losses that might arise in terms of consolidation around you know, a merger and merging of key aspects of the business. So my view is that the state should, those interests are best served by the state retaining the 25% that it has. Now, I'm conscious that the offer on the table, IAG want the 25% that the state have, but I'm inclined to push back on that and say, look, what we're concerned about, the government should be concerned about, is strategic interests.
And other Dublin TDs like Labour's Joe Costello and Fine Gael's Alan Farrell believe the sale shouldn't go ahead unless the government receives guarantees around the protection of jobs and the Heathrow landing slots, which provide international connectivity.
I think there has to be guarantees sought. I think it's going to be very difficult for Labour TDs in particular to go into the Dáil and to vote for the sale of the Aer Lingus holding in Aer Lingus, the government holding in Aer Lingus, unless they are quite satisfied that the conditions are clearly laid out in relation to the important issues that concern people, people's employment, the connectivity in particular, the slots. All of these issues are absolutely crucial.
If we lose those slots, I'm not so sure that Ireland will retain its competitive edge over a lot of the European nations. And I think that on that basis, for what you outlined, I think I might have to urge a different approach than the one we are currently taking.
But if the Heathrow slots are important to Dublin, they're seen as vital to Cork and the areas serviced by Shannon. In 2007, the Shannon Heathrow slots were redeployed by Aer Lingus for its Belfast routes, and TDs Pat Breen from Clare and Kieran O'Donnell from Limerick say the area suffered.
I was there in 2007 when the slots were removed and went to Belfast, and it was terrible in the region, and obviously it had a devastating effect in both tourism, in both industry, and when the slots were returned, obviously it made a big difference to the region again. Since then, we've seen a lot of foreign direct investment in the region, and I think it's vital that connectivity to Heathrow is maintained.
Shannon Airport was recently made independent by this government. It's proved to be a great success. We lost Heathrow slots back in 2007 to Belfast, and we saw the huge negative it had on Shannon Airport, and for me, what I want to ensure is that nothing undermines that continued success. So the Heathrow slots are vital for our region.
But it's not clear how the government could hope to protect jobs and the Heathrow landing slots if it disposes of its stake in Aer Lingus. And government TDs say verbal guarantees from IAG won't be enough. Cork Fine Gael TD Gerry Buttimer wants the government to get cast iron assurances that the Heathrow slots will be maintained before any shares are sold.
I think the Heathrow slots are critical to Cork. I think we need to have that cast iron guarantee. And I think that the process that we're undertaking as a government must really look at the issue of Cork Airport and the slots, not just for Cork, but also for Shannon as well.
Gerry Buttimer, Fine Gael TD, ending that report by Justin McCarthy. It's 7:30.
Pádraic Lodge is here with the sports news. Morning, Pádraic.
Good morning, Gavin. Well, Chelsea are through to the final of the League Cup in England for the first time in 7 years. They beat Liverpool 1-0 after extra time at Stamford Bridge, giving them a 2-1 win in aggregate. Branislav Ivanovic headed in the winner 4 minutes into extra time. It was a heated contest, though. 9 bookings, a confrontation between the managers on the sideline. And then Diego Costa was a central figure in the drama as well.
Yes, I saw a couple of tweets last night along the lines of two stamps from Costa, 8 more and he'll get a free coffee. This was a skirter from Liverpool who was being trod on. It seemed accidentally in some cases.
Yeah, but and whether it was or not, the referee didn't catch it, and the situation is that he escaped punishment. There's calls now for perhaps retrospective punishment for Costa. But we can hear from the Chelsea manager, Jose Mourinho, and he paid tribute to their beaten opponents.
Very good team, great work by Brendan, changing the shape and the model of play, because the way they started the season was not going in the right direction, and he was intelligent enough to change and to create a new team, because this is a new Liverpool team and a very difficult opponent. So I'm even happier because we beat a very good team over two legs.
In the final, Chelsea will take on the winners of tonight's second semi-final between Sheffield United and Tottenham. Tottenham lead 1-0 after the first leg. In the English Championship, Connor Salmon and Paul Green scored for Rotherham in their 4-2 win at home to Bolton. Ghana beat South Africa 2-1 to book their place in the quarterfinals of the Africa Cup of Nations as winners of Group C. Algeria went through to the last eight as group runners-up with a 2-0 win over Senegal. American teenager Madison Keys qualified for her first Grand Slam semi-final with a 3-set victory over Venus Williams overnight at the Australian Open in Melbourne. The 19-year-old will now face the top seed Serena Williams in Friday's semi-final. Williams swept past Dominika Cibulkova 6-2, 6-2. Defending men's singles champion Stan Wawrinka overcame Kei Nishikori in straight sets, and he's now through to the semi-finals. The Ireland rugby coach Joe Schmidt had some good news on the injury front ahead of the Six Nations Championship yesterday. Sean O'Brien looks set to make an international appearance for the first time in 14 months this Friday, with indications that he'll feature for the Irish Wolfhounds against England Saxons and Cork. The Leinster flanker's latest enforced absence began in early September, but he took a full part in training yesterday. Keane Healy is less likely to be ready by Friday, but could be fit for Saturday week's Six Nations opener in Italy. Fullback Niamh Briggs is the new captain of the Ireland women's team. The Waterford woman has 45 caps and replaces the retired Grand Slam winning captain Fiona Coughlan. Six players who featured in Tyrone's Dr. McKenna Cup panel are no longer involved. All-Ireland winners Joe McMahon and Dermot Carden, as well as former minor star Kyle Coney, are believed to have left the panel, while Mark Donnelly, Plunkett Kane and Kevin Gallagher are reported to have been dropped. There's extensive coverage across the newspapers this morning of the GAA Director General Pádraig Duffy's annual report. Given the success of staging last year's All-Ireland football semi-final replay between Mayo and Kerry in Limerick, Pádraig Duffy said consideration would now be given to staging future semi-final replays at provincial venues. He also addressed the claim that the GAA was too focused on making money.
In terms of finance, we have to generate revenue to drive the organisation on. We cannot improve facilities at home and abroad. We cannot provide resource personnel to coach and develop the games without finance. We don't have the level of income from international events that perhaps rugby and soccer do. So we have to be commercially active. There can be from time to time a challenge between tradition and innovation, and it's not always easy to find a balance between the two. We work very hard to do it. I think that by and large we achieve it. Clearly some people disagree with that, and as I said in the final paragraph of my report, the goal is always, and my goal is, to leave the GAA in a better place than it was before I came on board, and that will always be the challenge.
Kerry footballer Darren O'Sullivan has revealed that he quit his job last November to concentrate on his football career. The 28-year-old is currently recovering from hip surgery. And at the World Cup Sailing Regatta in Miami, Annalise Murphy placed 5th and 3rd in her races, and she's now 2nd overall.
Pádraig, thank you. It's 7:43. A dull debate on the proposed inquiry into incidents in the Cavan Monaghan Garda Division has been cancelled after the Cian Corley yesterday told the party some matters were sub judice. The debate had been due today. Our political correspondent David Davenport can tell us more. David, what happened?
Well, sources say that the reason that the Cian Corley made this decision was because of a High Court action that's underway at the moment, that it was launched by the former Justice Minister, Alan Shatter, which seeks to essentially challenge the findings of the Guerin report, which you'll recall actually spawned the inquiry that was due to be debated in the Dáil today. Now, it is a bit of a mystery as to why it took until the eve of the debate for the Cian Chorla to decide that it was in fact sub judice. There is some speculation that Alan Shatter himself made an intervention, in other words got in touch with the Cian Chorla through his lawyers to object to the debate going ahead. In any event, the debate has now been cancelled and the inquiry will be voted on in the Dáil without debate. But that does beg the question as to whether Mr. Shatter might take a further step and actually injunct the inquiry if he objects to it being debated in the Dáil. Presumably, he would have difficulties about the inquiry itself going ahead when he is in the High Court challenging its bona fides. So it's all a bit puzzling. But nonetheless, what's happened is that this debate that was down on the order paper for today is not now going ahead, as being supplanted by a vote.
What was it supposed to do?
Well, the inquiry was supposed to investigate a number of incidents in the Cavan Monaghan Garda Division, which were the subject of complaints from Garda whistleblower Boris McCabe and others. I think there's nearly a dozen incidents that were supposed to be investigated. The TDs were due to debate the terms of reference of this. Now, of course, with Alan Shatter challenging the terms of reference of the High Court, you can see an immediate conflict there, but it's an indication, if you will, that the former Justice Minister still feels pretty sore about the way he was treated and is intent on vindicating all his legal options.
David, thank you. That's our political correspondent, David Davenport. It's 7:45.
2014 was a hectic year for RNLI lifeboat stations. Their crews launched 1,089 times, bringing more than 1,400 people to safety. Those figures for last year also show that more and more people are getting into difficulty while out on leisure crafts. Owen Medland is the RNLI operations manager. He joins us on the phone. Owen, good morning.
A very good morning to you, Rachel, from quite a wild Belmullet in County Mayo.
Right. I hope you're not too busy in that neck of the woods today. Will you tell us about your year? Was it particularly busy?
It was, and where we've seen a significant increase is in the number of people we've been bringing to safety, a 10% increase from the 45 lifeboat stations that were operating around the island of Ireland. And it's a complete spectrum of different call-outs, and what we would continually urge is that people take basic precautions when they're... We want them to enjoy the water, obviously, but take the basic precautions, and if someone sees someone in difficulty, to dial 999 or 112 and seek the assistance from the Coast Guard.
Now, I have a feeling that most of us might reckon that your busiest stations would be maybe those close to the coast, but in actual fact, your busiest station last year was at Loch Ree in Athlone.
Very much so, and Loch Ree, one of the youngest lifeboat stations, only set up by the RNLI a couple of years ago, and 69 launches there last year and bringing 142 people into safety. And that's comparable with Hoth and Dunleary, who launched 117 times during 2014. And really, it just goes to show that our lochs, our inland waterways, our beaches, and as well as the traditional commercial aspects of fishing, they come together to show that there is danger in every waterborne environment.
Because looking at your figures, I noticed that Enniskillen RNLI, which is close to Loch Earn, of course, that was also particularly busy.
Yes, and the presence on the inland waterways, we operate a station also at Loch Derg, is showing the RNLI's expansion across the board. During 2014, we've set up a trialling a new all-weather lifeboat at Clifton and a new lifeboat station at Union Hall in Cork. Many of your viewers will remember the tragedy of the Teat Bon Homme in Cork there a few years ago. And really, the RNLI as a charity is looking to try and continue to expand its operations to prevent loss of life through drowning.
It is amazing work that your volunteers do. How do you fund what you do?
Well, we're a community-based organisation and a charity. We celebrated our 190th year last year, and it really is the communities that we're based in that that keep the RNLI going. 100% charity, and our crews are volunteers. They're people's next-door neighbours, sons and daughters, that are prepared to get up in the middle of the night at any time of the day or night 24/7 and go and respond. And as well as that, the employers that actually release our volunteers to undertake their service, and it is the communities that we're based in that support us.
Well, Owen, thank you very much indeed for taking our call this morning, and I hope you have a slightly quieter 2015.
Many thanks indeed, Rachel.
Not at all. Owen Medland there, who's the RNLI Operations Manager. The time is 9 minutes to it. And Brian Finn is here with business.
Rachel, thank you. Willie Walsh, the Chief Executive of International Airlines Group, is expected to meet government representatives possibly as soon as today on its proposed takeover bid for Aer Lingus. The sale of the government's 25% shareholding in the airline is far from certain, with a number of government TDs from both parties understood to be against the proposals. Any sale of the government stake has to be approved by the Dáil. Now, yesterday, the VHI announced that it was cutting the cost of premiums on a number of its health insurance plans and that it was freezing the cost of all others. Dermot Good of TotalHealthCover.ie is here. And Dermot, Leia announced a few price cuts last month, but when you see the biggest player in the market coming in and announcing that they're freezing prices or cutting some prices, that's quite a turnaround.
It is, Brian. It was completely unexpected, I have to say. The market was expecting an increase. That's what happens, I suppose, every year at this time of the year. I think it's great news for all of VHI's members, all their corporate clients and their over 1 million subscribers. I think it's also good news for all those people who are thinking of joining health insurance, because this new lifetime community rating is coming in from the 1st of May. So a lot of people who are, I suppose, sitting on the fence will have to make a decision fairly quickly. And this sends the right signals to the market. And hopefully the other insurance companies who may have been contemplating further rate increases, I think this sets a marker. And hopefully from a consumer perspective, others might now have to rethink their pricing strategy on the back of this. But it is definitely, it's a surprise move, but a very welcome one.
When they say that they're going to freeze the cost of certain plans, do they give an indication of how long that will remain in place?
No, they don't. I mean, I think the wording in the press release is at this time, and now this is the biggest time for renewal. So I think we can expect that we won't see any movement definitely within the next 6 months. But in fairness, the market is quite dynamic, and I think what the insurance companies have to do is leave themselves some, I suppose, wriggle room, that if an event were to occur that would have an upward impact on claims, they may have to adjust their rates. But I think we can hope that maybe for the rest of this year, hopefully there won't be any price increase from VHI.
Do you expect the others will follow suit now?
Yes, two insurance companies announced price increases in the last few weeks. But in fairness, compared to previous years, Brian, they are of the ilk of 3.5% to 5.5%. So the days of 20% to 40% price increases look like they're behind us for the moment, which is welcome news again. I think, yes, I mean, a VHI, the largest player who traditionally always goes up, if they hold their rates, I think other insurance companies, if they want to remain competitive, particularly with lifetime community rating coming down the line, they will have to do likewise. So it definitely, as I say, it sets a marker for all the other players, and a good one for the consumers.
We'll be hearing from the Minister for Health later in this programme, but he brought in the insurance companies a few months ago and made a number of concessions in return for price reductions or freezes like we're seeing today. Is this now the response to that meeting?
Yes, I think definitely, to be fair to the Minister, his intention or his desire was, look, I won't increase the levies and I won't increase the public hospital charges, and I expect the industry to reciprocate. And I think that's what we are seeing. VHI basically for the first time have done just that with no price increase, and we're hoping that the fourth player who hasn't played their card yet, we're hoping they will hold their rates steady. But even the two who have increased, Brian, they're very small increases. So it looks like what the Minister was hoping for, it looks like that, I suppose, he's getting that response from the insurance companies.
This lifetime community rating that you mentioned, that's coming in over the next few months, are we seeing over 35s make their way back into the health insurance market in response or in preparation for that as yet?
Yes, we're now beginning to see this. I mean, we're seeing inquiries coming in from people who are saying, look, I don't have insurance. They're saying, I don't particularly want to buy it, but I know I now probably have to, otherwise I'll be hit with this 2% loading. I think, Brian, what we're going to see is a lot of marketing activity in the market from the HIA and the insurance companies in the run-up to the end of April. But knowing consumers as we do, I think we'll see an awful lot of people waiting till the last 2 weeks of April to join. But we will see a lot of people, and we can't quantify it, but there will be an uplift in membership numbers for the insurance companies.
Just briefly, Dermot, we've spoken to you before about the large number of people who exited the market over the last few years. Are we seeing those people come back into the market, or has that tide stopped?
Well, we're seeing, I suppose, that the mass exodus has definitely stopped, which is good news. But a lot of the people who left the market were the 25 to 30, 34-year-olds. And unfortunately, this new legislation won't incentivise them to rejoin. But I think as we see employment levels rising, Brian, we will see a lot of those people who had to give it up because they lost their job. We will see them coming back into the market gradually.
Dermot, good. Thank you very much indeed. Now, currencies, finally, the euro is at $1.13.6 and just below 75 pence sterling.
Thank you very much. For the weather forecast, let's go to Met Aaron and Siobhan Ryan.
Thank you and good morning from Met Aaron. Well, it's a cold, wintry outlook for the rest of the week, but wind and snow warnings in operation for today, tonight and tomorrow. Currently a blanket yellow warning, but it could well be upgraded to an orange one for west and northwest counties. Winds peaking at the moment owing to the passage of a cold front, with snow risk at its greatest through this evening, tonight and first thing tomorrow. So for today, very windy, gusts in excess of 100 kilometres per hour. Some rain to begin, but showers following and they will turn to sleet and snow. Winds very strong and gusty, gale force west to northwest winds, with the risk of thunder also, and that snow will cause some disruption in parts and treacherous driving conditions. Bitterly cold today with the added wind chill effect, afternoon highs of just 2 to 5 degrees, coldest in the north. So for this evening and tonight, scattered sleet and snow showers with some moderate accumulations across the country. Staying very windy too in a strong and gusty westerly wind with frost and ice in parts, lowest temperatures of minus 1 to plus 2 degrees, coldest for Ulster. So for tomorrow, it's another cold, windy day with northwest winds, very strong and gusty. Sunny spells and scattered sleet and snow showers early in the day. Many areas, in fact, waking up to a dusting of snow. Later in the day, though, showers, and most of those, should revert back to rain, the exception, though, being Ulster. And there is also the ongoing threat of thunder. Temperatures a little higher than today, but nonetheless fairly cold, with values of 4 to 7 degrees. And for Friday and the weekend, well, winds thankfully easing down, but it will stay cold. Further wintry showers, most of which will affect north and northwest coastal counties. Much drier for the Midlands, south and east. In fact, some nice winter sunshine, just isolated wintry flurries. But frost and ice will develop after dark, particularly for sheltered spots. Today, in brief, very cold and very windy. Some rain to begin, with sunny spells and scattered showers following, turning increasingly to sleet and snow later, with the risk of thunder. Highest temperatures just 2 to 5 degrees, and that's in a strong to gale force west to northwest wind. That's your forecast. Good morning.
It's almost 8 o'clock on RTE Radio 1. Time to check out Toyota, the car brand with the best overall resale value in Ireland. Toyota, the best built cars in the world.
Here are some very important numbers. 3,358, the number of penalty point notices issued over the last week. 138, the number of drivers arrested on suspicion of drink or drunk driving in the last week. And 1, the number of people killed on our roads in the last 7 days. Will you be in next week's figures? Behind every number, there's a real person. Every time you use the road, you can help to lower these numbers. From the Road Safety Authority and an Garda Síochána.
Oh, that's a beautiful guitar.
Original 60s Sunburst.
38% of us own a musical instrument.
Nice. Will you play something?
No.
That we don't play. At Irish Life, we believe that rather than just sitting idly somewhere, your money should work as hard for you as it can. Irish Life Maps is here to help. With 5 investment funds to suit every type of investor, from the cautious to the very adventurous. It's time to get your money working harder. Search for Irish Life Maps or talk to your financial broker or advisor today. We know Irish Life. We are Irish Life. Irish Life Maps are multi-asset portfolio funds available in our pension and investment plans. Warnings: the value of your investment may go down as well as up. If you invest in these funds, you may lose some or all of the money you invest. These funds may be affected by changes in currency exchange rates. Irish Life Assurance PLC is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland.